Hello and welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York, on the unceded homelands of the Mohican people, known today as the Stockbridge-Munsee community. I'm Sina Bazilahicki, and today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, first, Mark Dunley brings us an update on the status of the budget negotiations over housing and an interview with Canyon Ryan of United Tenants of Albany. Then, roaming labor correspondent interviews Public Employees Federation, or PEF, about their upcoming community wellness and book fair. Later on, Mark Dunley informs us about the upcoming environmental justice lecture by the Justice Center of Rensselaer County. After that, Bria Barthel shares about the upcoming New York Folklore Merengue concert. And finally, Water Justice Lab interviews Scott Kellogg of Radix on their solar pontoon boat. But first, here are the headlines. The City of Troy received an $8.9 million grant and a $3.8 million interest-free loan from the federal infrastructure law and allocated through the state's Drinking Water Revolving Fund. The money is intended to help the city locate and replace lead service pipes. Those who live in a home built before 1975 and have not had a water service inspection there by the Department of Public Utilities should contact 518-237-0343. Again, that is 518-237-0343 as soon as possible. There's no charge for a technician to come to your home for an inspection. The city is also offering lead reduction Brita water pitchers for those with a verified lead service line. This fall, Hudson Valley Community College's new Astronomical Technology Institute, located at Albany International Airport, will open. New York's Senators Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand announced $500,000 of congressionally directed spending for the new institute. The money will go towards scholarships for low-income students and help the school buy more state-of-the-art equipment. The Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences has announced that it will be providing teach-out programming to help transition any incoming St. Rose transfer students. The college also hired 8 St. Rose faculty members to help facilitate the transition, they said. A day after media reports said that the New York City would not renew its contract with the controversial DocGo company over its mistreatment of providing service to migrants, including those housed in the Capital District, the city instead partially extended the contract for another 7 months. New York City plans to transition its work to a relatively cheaper provider, Gardner Environmental Services, a professional disaster relief company. The Capital Region Transportation Council and the City of Troy have released a draft Americans with Disabilities Act Public Streets and Sidewalks plan for public review. And that's it for the headlines. For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, listener-supported radio that builds community in Troy and the surrounding Capital Region through broad grassroots participation. Our content is produced by volunteers. To learn how you can contribute, go to mediasanctuary.org, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org, or call 518-272-2390. 9 tenant rights advocates were arrested on Tuesday at the state capitol, saying that the alleged deal on housing is not strong enough when it comes to including the good cause eviction law, which includes setting a cap on rent increases. Mark Dunley brings us this update on the status of the budget negotiations over housing.
We're talking with Canyon Ryan, who is Executive Director of United Tenants of Albany. We're taping this on April 10th, and we still don't really have a state budget lockdown. And one of the biggest points of contention has been what to do about not just the issue of affordable housing, but what are the rights of tenants. And there does seem to be some agreement as to including some of the provisions related to good cause eviction into any type of housing budget agreement. But people are still very upset about that. In fact, this week, a number of people got arrested at the state capitol for protests and the weakness of what they're talking about. So, Canyon, can you tell us where do the housing negotiations stand and Why are the tenant groups not happy with the so-called deal being discussed?
Sure. Thank you for having me. Yeah, so right now, you know, as you mentioned, a couple activists recently got arrested while protesting the governor regarding, you know, not just housing, but a slew of other things that she seems to be pushing for or against. One big, you know, position of ours is that we need, you know, the budget is a moral document. We need a just budget, and included in that should be just cause or good cause eviction protections. Where the, you know, negotiations seem to be right now is that good cause eviction would not nearly resemble what's written now and what's been proposed by Julia Salazar and Pamela Hunter. They're talking about exemptions for high rents, potentially even 165% of the fair market rent, which is not incredibly high, you know, to be considered not protected by, you know, arbitrary evictions, exemptions for new developments, exemptions for small landlords, pretty high rent increase allowances before it becomes questionable. And all of this is a concession for other things that we aren't really happy about, including individual apartment improvements, which is a regulatory scheme to increase rents, and tax breaks for developers. So as far as we know, things are not looking great, especially here in upstate New York, where good cause eviction would likely need to be an opt-in, meaning we would have to organize to get our local legislators to, you know, localize in common councils and city councils to pass good cause eviction protections.
Now, I know one of the things they were talking about early on was that particularly the unions in New York City, but elsewhere, wanted to ensure that in exchange for some of the, you know, subsidies were increased affordable housing, that pay would be increased. How is that, you know, standing at this point? Do we know?
As far as I know, REBNY, the Real Estate Board of New York, is really preventing any movement on any of these negotiations. The unions want fair pay for fair work, and the tenants are there with them. And the unions are also calling for good cause eviction because they recognize, much like just cause termination, good cause eviction makes a lot of sense for workers. You know, the tenants are the workers of the city, and you know, we're encouraging the unions to continue their fight to get fair wages, because those fair wages turn into usually affordable rents. As our incomes go up, the rent shouldn't necessarily follow it to the same T. So we hope for higher wages for our workers, and we hope for lower rents for our tenants. But as far as I know, not much movement. REBNY has been a huge block in terms of any progress on housing or labor needs as it relates to development and affordability.
Now, one of the things you just mentioned was that even if they do include some form of good cause eviction, not strong enough from the tenant perspective, that individual municipalities would still have to then do their own vote to opt in, which, you know, presumably in Albany, since already first one to pass, would do. But that means fights all over the state, and would the municipalities have ability to even further weaken what they adopt, or would they have to adopt the standard form across the state?
I don't think we have any clarity in terms of where the negotiations are right now, but that's a really important consideration. You know, like you said, Albany very likely would opt right in. I think the next day, before any city could, the city of Albany would pass good cause eviction because it was the first municipality in the state to pass it. That said, sharing a zip code with the city of Albany is Colony, 12205. And Colony is not necessarily a progressive bastion or you know, a town of tenant protections. And we have mobile home residents there fighting a no-cause non-renewal. Well, the cause is, the landlord says, you complain too much because the tenants don't just rent the lot, they rent the trailer. And they didn't have heat over Christmas. They didn't have a functional oven on Thanksgiving. And yeah, they would be left out of any deal, because I highly doubt that, you know, Crummy is going to push for Colony to adopt good cause eviction protections. So even if they can water it down, I mean, where we're at now is just, it's really, really upsetting and kind of disgusting that 5 years into this fight, we can't secure basic tenant protections to age in place and, you know, not be threatened with non-renewals for no reason. I think I mentioned earlier, and it's on our social media, but I myself recently received a non-renewal. And when I reached out to the landlord and said, why are you not renewing my lease? They said, we're deciding to go a different direction with this unit. never had an issue with my rent. I have put in complaints about no heat in the winter. If that's the cause, if that's the, you know, the issue and why they're trying to choose a new direction. Again, I mean, we need basic protection so that people can stay where they live and build a life around their home, which is just, it's being denied to us, denied by our legislators right now.
Now, I mentioned that earlier this week, a number of people were arrested at the Capitol, protesting this and I guess other things. How do we see these negotiations, playing out? I used to always say that we'd have to have an announcement at least three times of an agreement before the agreement actually stuck. So what's in play in terms of the future of actually getting this into the budget and getting a budget passed?
It's a good question. I mean, you know, we know that the governor, I believe, is going to D.C. or is going to be at a press conference with some White House officials. She's building up her national platform while, budget conversations are still in flux. We've heard that the governor is moving on good cause eviction. But again, that's not even nearly a bill that resembles the version of good cause that we want. And I know that there's actually a lot of talk about walking away from the table at this point, because if they leave upstate out, and they allow all these concessions and rollbacks on the Housing Stability and Tenant Protection Act, we're only losing. So what the three men in the room, which is actually two women and Carl Hasty, are determining right now in terms of budget negotiations, they're going to have to come back to their conference and say, look, we're going to pass good cause, but it's not even going to, you know, resemble the bill that's written. And we're also going to allow all these rollbacks on the Housing Stability and Tenant Protection Act. Can you guys live with that? And if that's the case, our hope is that legislators will say, no, we can't live with that. We can't live with a fake good cause eviction just to allow a bunch of concessions for real estate. So where are they now? Who knows? And then what happens when they talk to their caucuses? Who knows? We're not in this room. It's far too opaque for us to even know what's happening.
So we got about 2 minutes left. So I'll ask a couple questions and you can finish up. Affordable housing is what everybody talks about, but you know, besides things like good cause eviction and trying to limit rent increases, you know, are they talking about any other, you know, increase subsidies, housing vouchers, any type of supplement for expansion of Section 8 housing?
And just to sort of continue this really unfortunate angle, you know, right to counsel is apparently in the budget. The Senate provided some funding and the Assembly did too, but it's not the version of right to counsel that we want. There's no mandate for counsel. There's no pause on summary proceedings if a tenant doesn't have representation. It's really just more of the same funding for legal providers, which is super important, but we can't call that right to counsel. In terms of the Housing Access Voucher Program, the purpose of HAVP is to mimic Section 8, but also be available to newcomers and folks without a social security number and already homeless folks and folks that are at risk of homelessness. Here again, the governor is fighting us tooth and nail. She does not think that undocumented folks deserve any subsidies, despite having a huge housing crisis because of their influx and the fact that they're being used as a political tool. Once again, you know, our governor is preventing any progress on that front. Really frustrating, because we have families in our tenant associations in Albany. We have families across the Capital Region facing, you know, holdover evictions, no cause. It's increased over 100% in the city of Troy. They could use these vouchers, but the governor is making sure that, and the thing about vouchers too, is that they pay the landlord. It's a subsidy for landlords. It's an excuse for landlords to not even maintain their properties, because half these inspections are so basic. But still, you know, we can't have any progress on this front, because the higher echelons of our political system here are fighting us on basically every step.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. I've been talking with Canyon Ryan, United Tenants of Albany. This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you, Mark Dunley. Another update on the looming budget, the final budget for the state. And we will have another story on housing from the perspective of a tenant by Lennox Saputo tomorrow, so in our next program. So stay tuned for that. And for this week's labor segment, roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry interviewed Public Employees Federation, or PEF, about their upcoming community wellness and book fair on Saturday, April 27th.
Yeah, this is Willie Terry, your roaming labor correspondent for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. And today I have on the phone Joe Donahue, who's the Secretary Treasurer for the Public Employees Federation. And how you doing, Joe?
I'm doing well, Willie. Thanks for asking. Thanks for asking me to come on today.
No problem. And Joe, you know, what I want to talk to you today about is an event that y'all have coming up. And I know you had one last year, and it was very successful. And I just want to talk to you about the one you got coming up. So could you tell me a little bit about the event you have coming up, the community event, Wellness Fair?
Sure, Willie. Initially, as you said, we started this last year, and it was called the PEF Community Wellness Fair. That was going to be put on by our PEF Membership Benefits Plan program, which was chaired by Stephanie McLean Beefley. Now, initially, this was just going to be a wellness fair where we were going to have vendors come in and people could have their blood pressure checked and there would be different vendors. But one of our international unions is the American Federation of Teachers, and they initiated a program called Reading Opens the World, where they were giving away books mainly in institutions where children were residing or some of their clients.
What was the parent union name?
It's called the American Federation of Teachers, or AFT. The president is Randy Weingarten.
Gotcha.
So we decided to incorporate the Reading Opens with the World with the Wellness Fair, and we received 20,000 books from the American Federation of Teachers, which we proceeded to separate by age groups. We had anywhere from pre-K all the way up to high school, and we offered the books for children when they came in. Not only children, but teachers as well. Teachers were allowed to come in and get books for their classes. And we even had extras left over at the end, who we gave to Craig Apple, who's the sheriff of Albany County, as well as the mayor. She and all they took books for some of their various programs. Now, we're doing the same thing this year. We've got 20,000 free books. The Wellness Fair is at the Washington Avenue Army on Saturday, April 27th from 9 o'clock to 3. There is no charge. It's free admission. And not only the books, but there will be vendors there to serve the people in the community. So please feel free to stop down and partake.
And Joe, before I go deep into this, I have some more questions I want to ask you about the fair. But yep. Just tell, you know, our audience a little bit about PEF. You know, I forgot to ask you that. What is PEF and who do they represent and what do they do?
Okay, PEF stands for the Public Employees Federation. We have about a little over 51,000 members. Most of our members are state employees. We do have some county employees in our union. We're comprised of about 3,000 different titles. We have 10,000 nurses. We have two internationals, as I said before. The American Federation of Teachers is one of our internationals, and the Service Employees International Union is the other. I worked for the Department of Tax and Finance as a council leader and as an auditor, and was elected Secretary Treasurer in 2021. President Wayne Spence, who wishes he could be here. We've got all sorts of issues statewide going on right now, so we apologize for not being able to be here. He is a parole officer with DOCS. We are, as I said, we have 3,000 different titles, so we represent a lot of different people throughout the state of New York, from Long Island to Buffalo.
Mm-hmm. And what is your membership?
But we're just a little over 51,000.
Okay, and you represent people all across the state, you said?
All across the state. 3,000 different titles in all state agencies and some county agencies as well.
Mm-hmm. And your main office is located where?
It's Choice Connecticut Road in Albany.
Oh, it is in Albany. Okay, gotcha.
Oh, I'm sorry, not all. Well, it's Latham, really, Latham.
Mm-hmm. And how are y'all broken down? I mean, is this a certain region?
No, actually, we have 12 different regions throughout the state, but we are basically, depending on the agency you're in, whether it be, as I said, myself, Tax and Finance, Corrections and Community Service, it could be Department of State, the Comptroller's Office, Department of Labor, Department of Transportation. As I said, we are very, we also have Roswell Park Cancer Institute in Buffalo. We have SUNY, medical colleges, and that would be upstate in Syracuse area, and then downstate in Brooklyn, as well as Stony Brook on Long Island.
Gotcha. Oh, okay. And you only represent public employees?
Yes, correct. At this time, we only represent public employees.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, thank you, Joe, for that information that people can know about PEF. So, Joe, now you have this wellness fair coming up, like you said, on the 27th, which is a Saturday. I just want to ask you, why did y'all decide to do a wellness fair in this area?
We try to reach out to the community wherever we are. And once again, as I said, we are a statewide union. We are primarily concentrated in the Capital District, yeah, because this is a seat of state government. Mm-hmm. But we thought that area was probably underserved, mm-hmm, and we wanted to go out and reach into the community and try to offer something, not just for our members, but we also try to work with the community as well to be able to provide services for the residents or the citizens of the state of New York. Mm-hmm.
And I know that you said something about books, too. You know, so what else will be happening at the wellness fair, you know, besides, you know?
Oh, like I said, there'll be vendors there. There'll be different state agencies there. I believe that you'll be able to show things like check your blood pressure, little giveaways, informational booths. It's wide open. There's all, as I said, we have over 40 vendors, and so there'll be a wide array of offerings and information that'll be available for the people. And as I said, everybody's welcome. There is no charge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So it's open to everybody in the Capital Region.
Everybody stop down the Washington Avenue Armory in Albany. It's at 195 Washington Avenue, right in Albany.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there parking, you know, people driving, coming in?
There's on-street parking. I'll tell people that in the back of the arsenal, there is a public employees parking lot, and because it's a Saturday, you could park in there and you won't get any trouble. But other than that, there's no parking lot per se at the armory.
Mm-hmm. And Joe, so what is the... what do y'all hope to accomplish, you know, by having these?
I you know what I love about it? The best thing to me, Willie, is seeing a kid's face when they get a book they can call their own and take it home with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to share with the residents of the state of New York.
Yes, and I know you had, like I said, I know you had it last year. There was a lot of people there. So what kind of feedback did you get from last year?
Pardon?
What kind of feedback did you get from last year?
Oh, it was all positive. We had a radio station come down and they were DJing there. This year we're going to have a DJ, DJ Wire. We'll be spinning the tunes while it goes on. It's on the main floor. I don't know anybody is aware of it, but I mean, the Albany Patroons is the Continental Basketball Association Albany team. I went used to go back to see them in the day. We'll be right there on the floor where the Patroons play, and you never know, maybe some will stop by sometime.
Okay. And Joe, now, if someone want to get some information, is there a number or a website they could go on?
There are flyers around. You can call the health fair. You can either send an email to healthfair2024 mm-hmm. at pef.org, or you can call 800-767-1840.
Mm-hmm. And again, the time of this is from what?
It's from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. 195 Washington Avenue, Albany Armory.
Oh, okay. All right. And though, hopefully a lot of people come like they did last year. And hopefully have a nice day. Hope you have a nice day.
That was roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry asking about the upcoming Public Employees Federation, or PEF, or as Willie said, PEF, about their upcoming Community Wellness and Book Fair on Saturday, April 27th. And this is part one of two. For those of you just tuning in, I'm Sina Bazila Hickey, and you are listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network on WOOCLP 105.3 FM Troy, WOOGLP 92.7 FM Troy, WOOSLP 98.9 FM Schenectady, WOOALP 106.9 FM Albany, WCAALP 107.3 FM Albany, and streaming online at mediasanctuary.org. This program comes from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York. If you like what you hear, you can support this program by sharing our content or rating us on your favorite podcast platform or sharing, you know, telling a friend about the work that we do. Find today's stories and more at mediasanctuary.org. The Justice Center of Rensselaer County is holding the Robert J. Doherty Memorial Lecture on Environmental Justice, and Mark Dunley learns more by speaking with Noreen McKee.
We're talking today with Noreen McKee, who's with the Justice Center of Rensselaer County, and on Sunday, April 14th at 1 p.m. over at the UAlbany School of Public Health in Rensselaer, they are presenting the Robert Doherty Memorial Lecture on Environmental Justice. So welcome, Noreen, and maybe just give us a brief introduction to, you know, what the Justice Center is and what will be happening at this lecture on Sunday.
Sure, I'd be happy to, and thank you for having us. The Justice Center the Justice Center of Rensselaer County was started in 2020, and our primary goal is to create and achieve equality by addressing persistent and structural prejudice in all of our systems, political, economic, educational, and social. We were started by a fellow by the name of Robert J. Doherty. He dedicated his life to providing our communities with an awareness of social justice issues and fighting prejudice and racism throughout his life. He was really an outstanding humanitarian, and he was also a public servant. He was a former Troy city councilman. And so the intent of the lecture series is to call attention to these vital social issues and offer solutions. We bring in speakers to cover these subjects, such as racial discrimination, police reform, mass incarceration, and environmental justice. Last year was our first year, and we sponsored the distinguished professor and author, Dr. Peniel Joseph, out of the University of Texas. His latest book that came out last year was called The Third Reconstruction, America's Struggle for Racial Justice in the 21st Century. And we've done a few lectures in the past. Our first was with Doug Blackman, who wrote the Pulitzer Prize winning book, Slavery by Another Name. And after that, we sponsored Dr. Alice Green from the Law and Justice Center in Albany.
This year you seem very focused on environmental justice and sort of two-part. The first part is actually my wife, Judith Hank, from Beyond Plastics. Why are you asking her to present?
Well, we wanted to address environmental justice, and we thought it would be a good way to talk about the whole global issue of the environment. And we have right here the expert, Judith Enck, she has done an enormous amount of work to end plastic pollution. And so we wanted to bring her on board to really talk about the global issue. And then, of course, we really need to hone in on our local issues, because we have very serious environmental issues here in Rensselaer County, affecting Rensselaer County and the whole capital region. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where we were coming from to sponsor this year's subject matter of addressing environmental justice.
Now, I'm sure Judith will be talking about the effort to reduce packaging, but the second part of the plastic packaging in particular, but the second part is Dr. David Carpenter from, I guess, the School of Public Health, interviewing some of the lead-in environmental groups in the Capital District. You got Bob Welton for the Rensselaer Environmental mm-hmm. Coalition does the Dunn Landfill. You got Joe Ritchie from Lysol Norlite fighting the Norlite Hazardous Waste Incinerator. Barbara Heidenson from the Clean Air Coalition of Greater Ravenna Queemans, working on a number of issues, particularly the Ravenna Cement Plant. And then Greg Campbell Cohen, who's with this group called Timber, but talking about the lead pipe replacement. So what will be some of the highlights from their presentation?
Well, they are going to give us an update on all their issues. And I believe that probably the most significant one will be Lights Out, coming from Joe Ritchie of Lights Out Norlite. Plant has suspended operations, and we're not sure, at least the last time I spoke to Joe, he wasn't sure if this was the beginning of a shutdown or not. So I think we're going to have some more information on that as we address that on Sunday afternoon. The lead pipe replacement issue is a serious issue here in Troy. We've found lead in our drinking water, and there's been a movement by the city administration to replace all the lead pipes in Troy. And so we're hoping to hear that they haven't been making significant progress in that area. And certainly Bob Welton from the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition, he will give us an update on the permit renewal for Dunn Landfill, and hopefully we'll have get to the point where they will not, DEC will not renew the permit. And Clean Air Coalition, we want an update. I think Barbara Heidenson will be giving us a clear picture of what is developing in that area, in the Ravenna Coeymans area. So we're very excited. Dr. Carpenter is going to moderate in the second half of the event a discussion amongst these four environmental leaders, and he will be asking them, questions, pertinent questions about the work that they do, why they do it, and the results that they hope to achieve. So we're very excited about this. We've been planning it for several months now, and Sunday is only a couple days away. So, yeah. And we're hoping to get a fair, a good turnout. So we'll see.
Now, one of the, I guess, newer groups on this list is Timber, and they'll be talking about the lead pipe replacement. Can you give us a little background on what Timber is?
Timber is not, Greg is the, he has really led the fight on replacing the lead pipes. He was the one that really brought it to the attention of the community. Timber is his organization. It's not, as far as I know, an environmental organization. He pretty much works on his own, and this has been the one area of concern that he has directed his efforts at so far.
So what else will the Justice Center for Rensselaer County be working on, both to follow up on this particular meeting, but in the coming year?
Well, we are always trying to address issues that come before us with regard to the areas that I talked about, addressing persistent and structural prejudice in our systems here. One of the primary areas that we've been involved with over the past couple of years has been police reform, making sure that, our police have adopted body-worn cameras and dashboard cameras, and coming up with a policy. I believe the city is still in negotiation to come up with a policy on governance of body-worn cameras, and we've been very involved with that. We're also planning to our next year's lecture series, and we're just at the beginning of that. That is pretty much the highlight of our year, is bringing in speakers to talk about these important issues, and bring awareness to the community, and not only awareness, but how we can, as members of the community, address these issues to try to solve these persistent problems that affect the quality of our lives.
So the Robert Daugherty Memorial Lecture on Environmental Justice this Sunday, April 14th at 1 p.m. It will be at the UAlbany School of Public Health, which is at One University Place over Rensselaer, New York. We're talking, this is Mark Dunley with the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, and we've been talking with Noreen McKee with the Justice Center of Rensselaer County.
And if that date and location came by too quickly, you can find the story at our website, mediasanctuary.org. And in the description, you can find that again, Sunday, April 14th, 1 p.m. at UAlbany School of Public Health. The group Los Quisqueñanos from the Dominican Republic will be performing in concert on April 14th from 3 to 4:30 at WAMC's The Linda in Albany. Bria Barthel gets us the scoop.
This is Bria Barthel for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, and I'm talking today with someone from New York folklore about a very cool concert coming up. So with me is Edgar Betelu, and I'm going to let him talk about the concert. Edgar, welcome to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you very much, Bria. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you for the invitation and the opportunity to tell you about what we are doing.
Okay, and first, you share one of the coolest titles. I've talked with somebody else who has the coolest title of folklorist, but you have folklorist slash. So what is your position at New York Folklore?
Okay, let me begin by telling you a little bit what New York Folklore is, and then I'll tell you what I do specifically for New York Folklore. New York Folklore is a nonprofit organization. Actually, we are celebrating our 80th year this year. We're based in Schenectady, but we are part of a big network of folklorists and folklore organizations throughout the state. Our mandate, our call, what we do is to promote, amplify, research, document, and support in various manners all traditional expressions of the various communities of New York State. We work with foundations, with National New York State Council for the Arts, National Endowment for the Arts, and different foundations to, as I said, support traditional arts and folk arts throughout the state. My role, specifically in the organization, is field worker, which means that I go around the state, basically up and down the Hudson River and the various counties and the capital region, locating and documenting traditional artists of various communities.
And when you say arts, whenever I stop by the gallery at New York Folklore, which is on J Street in Schenectady, I'm amazed at the variety of arts that are there. So music is the main focus for today to talk about the concert. But right now there's a cool exhibit of giant metallic dream catchers of all different shapes and sizes. You have a small store that has pine needle ornaments and quilting and all sorts of things. So let's get on to the concert. What is this concert coming up?
The concert coming up this Sunday, the 14th at 3 p.m., is part of an ongoing collaboration partnership that we have with WAMC and its theater, De Linda, in Albany. We have been working with the theater for almost 2 years now, presenting traditional folk music from the area, from the capital region and the Hudson Valley. We have presented Indian musicians, Pakistani music. Last month we had a Mexican group performing Jarocho music from the Veracruz area. Next month we will have a traditional Irish folk music ensemble performing there. But specifically, this coming Sunday at 3 p.m., we will be presenting a group called Los Quisqueyanos, which will be performing traditional merengue music from the Dominican Republic, also known as Perico Ripial.
And when you say traditional merengue, can you tell us a little bit about what merengue means and how it's different from other styles?
Merengue is one of the traditional genres of music of the Dominican Republic. The genre itself is an amalgamation of African, European musical traditions that, just like throughout the Caribbean, created different musics in the different parts of the Caribbean. Specifically, in the Dominican Republic, merengue, which is kind of a countryside folk music, and its version more so of traditional merengue, is a very old form. The instrumentation tells you a lot about, you know, the traditions that contribute to it. On the one hand, you have an accordion, which is a two-button accordion, which is exactly the same accordion used in polka, in Irish music, in Norteño music. I mean, it's a, you know, an accordion, the piano of the poor.
I've never heard it called that before. That's very interesting because it does have a keyboard of sorts.
Yes, the accordion is an amazing instrument that is present in so many musical traditions throughout the world. This version of the accordion is actually originally a German accordion that traveled to the Americas via, you know, the conquest of the Americas. Everything came in through the Caribbean, in fact, through mostly Cuba. So the traditional merengue, you have the accordion, you have a double-headed drum, which is called tambora. As a bass, what's used is a marimbula, which is actually a box with metal plates that, when they're played, creates the sound of a bass.
And the picture I'm looking at that's on the flyer shows that the gentleman playing the marimbula is sitting on the box to play it.
Yes, good point. Yes, to play the marimbula or marimba, you sit on the box as you sit on, you know, there are other percussive instruments in throughout the world, like the cajon. So they sit on top of this box, and they produce the sounds that are, you know, the heavy bass sounds that support the group. And then additionally, there is an instrument called the huira, also very, very common in the Caribbean, which is a kind of a metal scrape that is, you know, scraped with a metal, kind of a metal fork. And, you know, it's a rhythmic percussive instrument.
So it looks like it's about 8 to 12 inches long, a tube of metal.
Exactly. That's what the huira is. There are very many, many different versions of huira. Some are made with gourds. Some are metal. And as I said, they're prevalent in many, many musical traditions in the Americas and the Caribbean.
So huira, do I have the word right? Huira is something that has sort of like ridges that you scrape against for percussive sound.
Exactly, for percussive and rhythmic effects. It's a rhythm percussive instrument.
How do you spell huira?
G-U-I-R-A.
G-U-I-R-A, okay, but it's huira.
Huira.
Huira. Okay, and if people wanted more information about this event, and you do from the picture, it looks like it's going to be very cool, where can they get more information?
Yes, you can go to New York Folklore website, which is, if you type New York Folklore, that will appear, or the website of the Linda. You can look at the event, again, this coming Sunday at 3 p.m.,
The website is www.nyfolklore.org. And this is Bria Barthel talking with Edgar Betelu. Thank you so much, Edgar.
Bria, thank you so much for the invitation, the opportunity to be here and tell you about New York folklore and what we're doing. And I hope to see you there on Sunday. I invite everybody to go. It's amazing music. These are artists that are local, and it's beautiful music. Come ready to dance, so bring comfortable shoes.
Dancing? I'll be there. Thank you again.
And that is the group Los Quisque Años from the Dominican Republic performing on April 14th at WAMC's The Linda. And next, Water Justice Lab is currently seeking applicants for this year's Youth Fellowship. Well, what does a Youth Fellow do? You would do field collecting with water samples, work in the lab testing water, visit local field trips, do field recordings, and more. And this next piece, we'll hear from last year's fellows, Muzamil Mote and Algeron Wright, interviewing Scott Kellogg of the Radix Center on the solar pontoon boat.
Water Justice Lab here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media's Nature Lab spent summer 2023 investigating water quality and water infrastructure in Troy in the Capital Region. They learned about and reported on contaminants like sewage and waterways and microplastics and lead in drinking water. On August 15th, Youth Fellows Muzamil Mote and Algeron Wright and mentors Kathy High and Elisha Bacon took a solar pontoon boat trip along the Albany waterfront with Scott Kellogg of Radix Ecological Sustainability Center. Scott showed examples of where and how sewage contamination enters the Hudson River through combined sewer overflow, and took the team to view several floating islands he has constructed with Radix with youth and community participation. These islands are designed to aid in water restoration and habitat improvement, providing shelter for plants, animals, and other life while also assisting in nutrient cycling.
Hello, my name is Algeron Wright.
My name is Muzamil Mote.
We're standing on the waterfront with Education Director Dr. Scott Kellogg from Radix Ecological Sustainability Center. All right, so I had a couple questions. Well, me and Muzamil had a couple questions for you. The first one I'd like to start off with was, what was the significance of the wall protecting the shoreline, and what was it before industrialization factories?
You mean in Albany? So I believe that wall was created to channelize the river, which means to make it deeper and straighter so that larger ships would be able to get in here, thus facilitating industrial and capitalistic purposes. It had the end result, though, of destroying a lot of what we call riparian habitat. Things like mudflats and wetland plants that create habitat for a number of birds and other organisms. Oh, that's one of the oil tankers.
Oh, that's the bomb train.
Yeah, the proverbial bomb train. Now, supposedly they're mostly just carrying ethanol now, but I don't really know. There's actually a code to figure out what they're carrying based on the numbers on the sides. But yeah, these things will back up into the Port of Albany and be staging all night long, keeping residents who live near the port just awake all night with all the clanging and banging together.
If they were to be targeted for terrorism,
do they create a vulnerability as far as terrorism? Probably. I mean, they have created enormous problems in places where there's been high-speed derailments, like Lac Mégantic, which is a town in Quebec. I forget the year, but early 2000s, where one of these derailed at a high speed and incinerated the town and killed about 50 people. when they're glowing, when they're going at a low speed, there isn't so much of a risk of that, but there is a concern with basically chronic exposure to the pollutants that are constantly off-gassing off of them. Particularly if they're carrying crude oil, they're off-gassing benzene, which is a known carcinogen.
If they were to explode, would that take out all of Albany?
Well, there's actually different... I remember there was a big protest about this issue a number of years ago, and there were online maps where you could see whether you lived within the so-called blast zone were there to be an explosive derailment. So those resources are available online.
Thanks, Scott. We do community science at the Nature Lab. Do you partake in community science at Radix, and why is it important?
Yeah, so the Radix Center is an urban environmental education center, building a demonstration site of sustainable tools and technologies that are designed to teach urban residents with a particular focus on youth how to have greater local access and control over food, water, waste management, energy production. So, a lot of the work that we do is based around developing ecological literacy and greater scientific understanding among youth from a whole variety of topics. Like doing what we are right now, going out on the river and learning about its history, about the pollution events that are impacting it. We study air quality issues, how that impacts people's health in the city of Albany, the urban heat island. We do a lot of tree planting, particularly street tree planting, to try and mitigate urban heat island. We do a lot of gardening. There's a lot of science of agroecology and sustainable agriculture that we get into to teach folks how to be able to promote food sovereignty and have control over what they grew and access to food. Composting, there's certainly a lot of science involved in that, so we do a lot of work with educating people around composting sciences as well. So yeah, I would say a lot of what we do at the Radix Center could be described as a form of community science.
Thanks. How do you feel about the current state of the river?
I feel like the river needs a lot of work still. It has a long way to go before as clean as it could be, but I am at the same time also encouraged by the fact that it's improved so much in the past 30 years, particularly, you know, since the passing of the Clean Water Act, and that you have had so many organizations engage in activism and advocacy around improving it. That's really heartening to me. I'm concerned about people's lack of access and familiarity with the river, so we put a lot of work and emphasis on trying to develop what we call an ethic of reciprocity between people in the river, believing that the first step in getting them to care about it is to bring it to them, bring them to it, and develop a sense of love and familiarity and connection with it. Since, particularly in the south end of Albany, many residents have no access to the river because they've been cut off from it by the presence of Interstate 787 and by the train tracks. So doing what we can to improve access and in the short term, bringing youth down to the river and building artificial floating wetlands and showing them that it's possible using simple and affordable methods to take proactive measures towards improving the health of the river.
Thanks. For those unfamiliar with CSO or combined sewage overflow, can you tell me what it is?
Sure. CSO, like you mentioned, right, stands for Combined Sewer Overflow. That's what happens when we have a heavier rain event in cities like Albany or Troy. We have a single set of pipes in the ground that handles stormwater and sewage together. And when there's a heavy rain event, by design, those will overflow and spill raw sewage into the Hudson River, which creates a variety of environmental and human health issues. One, you know, making the river unsafe for people to recreate on it or to fish from it. And also triggering algal blooms that can result in depleted oxygen conditions and fish die-off. So the way to fix it, in my opinion, would ultimately put two sets of pipes in the ground, which realistically is probably not going to happen, but in the meantime, we should be doing whatever we can to be eliminating impervious cover in urban areas and replacing it with green space, which will have the capacity to absorb stormwater and prevent sewer overflows, and from also doing things like rainwater harvesting, where we're catching water off of impervious rooftops and then slowly releasing it over time so as to decrease the likelihood that rain events are going to trigger CSOs, which I'll also point out are going to occur with greater frequency as climate change advances.
All right, thank you for that, Scott. You said you talked about your artificial islands. Can you tell me more about it and their purposes?
So with the youth in RADx EcoJustice Associate Program, we build what are called artificial floating wetlands, which are floating structures that create attachment site for native wetland plants. And we deploy them near sewage overflow pipes in Island Creek Park in Albany, which is the only public access to the Hudson in the south end of Albany. And the water plants grow on the islands, and their roots grow down into the water column where they provide habitat for microorganisms, beneficial microorganisms, beneficial bacteria. So when sewer overflow events happen and the water flows through the roots of the water plants, they're purified by the bacteria living there and the plants themselves. And at the same time, they're also creating habitat for a number of organisms like fish and eels and birds, which otherwise don't have a lot of places to live in Albany because of the reason you mentioned earlier, right, about that big concrete wall that's there is just a sterile, lifeless wall that has very little edge habitat or place for anything to live. So they are going a long way to diversifying and complexifying the shoreline of Albany.
Okay, great. Thanks, Dr. Scott Kellogg. I appreciate it.
Thanks to Emily Schussis for editing that story. And you heard from Muzamil Mote and Algeron Wright interviewing Scott Kellogg of RADx Center. To learn more about the fellowship applications for to be a Water Justice Lab Fellow, you can go to our website, mediasanctuary.org/WJL/. And that is our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Sina Bazila-Hickey. We want to thank all the volunteers who made today's episode possible. This is a team effort. So thank you, Mark Dunley, Vinny Dama-Polito, Bria Barthel, Willie Terry, and Emily Schussis. We want to remind you that we have an excellent concert coming up this Saturday at the Sanctuary for Independent Media, Caña Dulce y Caña Brava, a group out of Veracruz, Mexico. It'll be excellent this Saturday, April 13th at 7 p.m. So hope to see you there. More information at mediasanctuary.org. And this program covers stories of social and environmental justice produced by the community, for the community, and is supported by independent donations. So if you value independent media, consider a gift of a monthly donation by going as a sanctuary sustainer by going to mediasanctuary.org. And we want to hear from you, and you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Hudson Mohawk Mag, or send us an email to hmm@mediasanctuary.org. Tune in weekdays at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to hear local news, or stream Sanctuary Radio at mediasanctuary.org. Full episodes and individual stories are available on demand at our website and on your favorite podcast platform. It would be great if you could rate us on that podcast platform so that we can get more listeners and get this work out there. So thanks to you, our listeners, for making this all worthwhile.